United States against Davis. Mr. Hunsmeyer.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Dan Hansmeyer. I'm an attorney with the Federal Defender's Office for the Central District of Illinois. Here on behalf of the appellant, Derek Davis, raised one issue, Fourth Amendment issue, has to do with a vehicle, a seizure, occupants of the vehicle. Essentially, at this point, light of the briefing, our argument essentially doesn't turn on Fourth Amendment principles anymore. I think essentially there's two issues, reasonable suspicion, probable cause, sort of the record. You know, everyone below says reasonable suspicion on the probable cause, only the magistrate does. In this court, we attacked reasonable suspicion on two grounds based on when the seizure actually occurred. Our first is when the car is essentially sandwiched. Second is what everyone conceded below, assuming that that's not alternatively when the cop says, show me your hands. On the reasonable suspicion, you know, the government sort of takes two-prong attack, I guess. The first is that a seizure never occurred. It's our position that that's waived. They clearly conceded below that a seizure occurred when Sergeant Walker said, show me your hands, so they can't come to this court and now say a seizure never occurred. With respect to the other argument, assuming a seizure occurred and when it occurred, you know, our position is that the government hasn't presented an argument in response to what we said initially, that a seizure occurred when the car sandwiched. We cite a handful of cases from this court, Supreme Court, and other circuits. We rely heavily on United States v. Green, Pavelski, and Packer from this court. The government doesn't cite any of those cases, not even once. It's kind of hard to reply when the government doesn't respond. I think there's case law from this court that says waiver principles apply to the government, and it's our position that they need to address that, and they didn't. And therefore, on the reasonable suspicion finding, this court needs to find that reasonable suspicion did not exist. The probable cause, it's kind of a little trickier issue. In our opening brief, we explained that while the magistrate judge found probable cause of a traffic violation, Judge Scott did not, even though, and the key here is that Mr. Davis objected on that basis. Well, when you object to that on that basis, Congress has said explicitly in 636B1C that the district court needs to make a de novo determination. Clearly didn't happen in this case. So at this point, it's our position that, if anything, on that issue, it has to go back for that finding, and that's an Article III requirement, essentially. There's one Article III judge that can decide that issue, and it's the district court. The magistrate judge is a non-Article III judge. He has no authority to make that legal conclusion. The government's position on this affirm on any ground, I just don't think that extends to this factual situation. I don't think they found a case where this court has extended that doctrine. I don't think a case exists, and I don't think that case exists because we have a constitution that invests adjudicatory power in Article III judges. And because when Congress passed the Magistrates Act, 636, it explicitly said, and the Supreme Court has recognized, that the final determinations come from district courts. And then if a district court is going to, you know, take this 636B1B approach and sort of hand off a case to the magistrate judge, that comes with some responsibility. Primarily when there are objections, court has to address them. And because that didn't happen here, there is no decision on probable cause for this court to address. So that would be our position. If there are not any questions. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Ms. Mullen.
May it please the Court. Linda Mullen on behalf of the United States. I feel like we're sort of losing the forest for the trees, maybe, in some of the briefing in this case. And what I would ask this Court to do is to look at the facts here and ask whether or not anything that happened here offends your constitutional sensibilities. We have officers out on patrol. They see a car fail to signal a turn. Clear probable cause violation. Now, we have that fact found both by the magistrate judge and the district court judge, even though the district court didn't ultimately rule as a matter of law on that point, didn't address it at all. The district court judge did make that factual finding, and we think that's important. So we have a probable cause violation. We have the officers now in two unmarked cars sort of tracking this car. The car ends up parked in an abandoned, dark parking lot behind a country club, known for drug and alcohol violations. No, not a high crime area for drug dealing. This is a teenage parking spot, essentially, where kids go after hours.
How many colleges are there in Jacksonville? Just McMurray and Illinois?
I'm not sure, actually, how many. But this is, you know, one of those recreation, and I'm not sure it's even college students, but the recreational areas.
It is a high crime area, and I was trying to figure out. And I think Jacksonville, Illinois, got a high crime area.
I think it's you know, crimes and misdemeanors. It's one of these people go with their bottle or whatever and after dark with their friends. Doing God knows what. And so the officers routinely patrol back here. Both the magistrate and the district court found that that the parked car was not blocked in by these two vehicles that came. It just wasn't. That there were the vehicles were several lengths away. The officers get out of their cars. They don't have their guns drawn. They don't have overhead lights on their unmarked cars. They walk up to a parked car with their flashlights to ask a couple of questions. As they do, they see the driver utter an expletive. They see the passenger dive toward the floorboard. It was only at that point that the officer said, "Show us your hands," as an obvious safety precaution under those circumstances, a very limited, benign intrusion. Three out of four of the occupants raise their hands, and the defendant doesn't. And as we say in the brief, what would we have the officers do at this point? They could keep saying, as they did repeatedly, "Raise your hand, show us your hands, show us your hands." The defendant doesn't do it. They say, "Sir, please step out of the car." As he's stepping out of the car, there's the gun. That's the sum and substance of this case. And we would ask the court to just refocus on whether or not, again, that offends any constitutional sensibilities here. We think the officers did exactly what they ought to have done here, and that any intrusion here was so de minimis as not to raise any constitutional concerns. Having said that, I would be happy to address any of the more technical or procedural questions that have been raised in the appeal. Seeing none, I will return the balance of my time. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Anything further, Mr. Hansmeier?
You know, on the probable cause, let me just read this. Page 7 from the district court's opinion. It's page 13 of the appendix. Officer Broom testified that the Cadillac was not blocked in by the officer's vehicles, and the occupants of the Cadillac were free to leave at that time. The court finds this testimony to be credible, thus at that moment there was no stop. The officers were just approaching a parked car in a public place. Look, if that's what Judge Scott believes, then how can you say that she's finding that this is a traffic stop? I mean, clearly she's not. That argument makes no sense to me. There is no probable cause determination. I mean, the government, maybe they want to ignore the procedural stuff, but the bottom line is the procedural stuff is constitutional.
Judge Scott said that the officer said that she saw the violation, but
yes,
had no intention of conducting an arrest. But she found the officer to be credible when she said she saw the violation. So
that's true.
That's what counsel was talking about, not what you're talking about.
That's not what I'm talking about?
No, you're not talking. You're talking about two different things. She said,
I don't know.
You said that he never made the finding, but she did. She found it credible. The witness to be credible who said that. Now that's a finding, so you can go from there.
Well,
doesn't make a particle of difference. I just didn't want to leave the position.
I mean
that she misled the court. She didn't.
I'm not saying that at all. I'm saying that a probable cause determination is more than one sentence in a finding of fact. What I'm saying is that a probable cause determination is a mixed question of law and fact. And there are more facts that go into that than this one sentence about she didn't see him turn. And I think that's clear by what I just read, that when Judge Scott says there was no stop, That's what
now,
she...
Now I'm lost.
Okay.
The Supreme Court held in Wren that if officers see somebody commit a traffic offense, they have probable cause. You don't need anything more. That's it. So what's missing for probable cause here?
Well, here there... Well, one, you... Here's the problem with one finding that Officer Bruhn saw a traffic violation. If coupled with Judge Scott's other finding that the stop occurred when Sergeant Walker said, show me your hands, that's one problem right there because you have two different officers. You have Officer Bruhn, Sergeant Walker testifies, I didn't see the traffic stop.
You only need one officer seeing a crime to have probable cause to arrest for that crime.
But Sergeant Walker has, sorry.
Your brief seems to be premised mm-hmm. on the assumption that probable cause is limited to what the officers at the scene announce to the defendants or something like that. And that's not the law.
Well, are we assuming, is this conversation flowing past 636? Because initially, I think our argument under 636 is something the government hasn't addressed. And I think that is the key of our position. I mean, you're right. Maybe it goes back to the district court, and based on further factual findings, there is a probable cause determination.
What further findings are needed?
He's already found probable.
Well, of course. The
officer testified that he saw a traffic violation. The district judge said that she thought that the officer was credible.
But
that's it.
Officer Bruhn also testified that the occupants of the Cadillac were free to leave.
Yes.
So how are you free to...
That's perfectly normal in traffic stops.
That somebody's free to leave after they're pulled over for a traffic violation?
Have you ever left after you've been pulled over without being arrested? Or have you been driving...
No. That's different. This is the initial stop. You're not free to leave when you're initially stopped.
But the fact is, when
counsel,
they meant to stop,
there are many crimes that officers see creating probable cause for arrest that do not actually lead to arrests.
Thank God.
Or right? Seizure.
If you're an officer sitting on Lakeshore Drive, you would observe almost everybody violating the speed limit.
Okay.
You have probable cause to arrest everybody. And if you choose to arrest them, you choose to arrest them.
Fine.
That doesn't mean that you actually arrest all of them.
Exactly. So
but
if you
if
don't
you choose
seize
to
them,
arrest one, he can't complain there was no probable cause.
But this we're talking about a seizure, and she says they were free to leave. So how can the traffic violation be the justification if they were free to leave?
Until they were arrested, they were free to leave.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, counsel. The case is taken under advisement.